All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. My name is Josh. Hope you all had a decent weekend. I'm coming to you yet again after another poor Barcelona performance, this time a loss in the Clásico at Real Madrid in the Bernabeu, wearing Drake kits, which is not, wasn't a good day. So today we're going to be chatting with managing Madrid's Christopher McCormick. We were supposed to be joined by Christopher last week, but some travel stuff got in the way, so we pushed it to this week. I was hoping that would mean, you know, with a recap pod, it would be Barcelona going in, really showing who's boss in Spain. that wasn't the case. A lot of questions out there for Barcelona now. So we're going to try to, you know, be gracious, of course, because that's what we would have done if we had won, and hope Christopher returns the favor. Check out managingmadrid.com for all of the great work they do, despite the fact that they do write for Real Madrid. They are a great site. And yeah, let's get into the pod with Christopher. Alrighty, everybody. I am joined by our mortal enemy, Christopher McCormick from Managing Madrid. Christopher, how are we doing today?
Not too bad.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I'm a very happy mortal enemy today.
Yeah. You know, when we had to push the pod back to this week, I was hoping it would be an occasion of joy for me. I've done many of these, one with you, a few with your counterpart, Matt. And since I started doing these a few years ago, I haven't had very many, you know, good times to talk about. Unfortunately, we didn't do one after the 4-0 win last year, which would have been nice. So I sit here in submission yet again after a miserable week as a Barcelona supporter. So, you know, my recap of the match is Barcelona lost. What, in your head, how are you going to remember this Clásico?
It's funny that you, you were saying that you haven't had much success since you started this podcast, because I was going to the Clásicos with the thought that somehow, some way, Real Madrid will just toss it. Somehow. I think I've kind of grown up with a certain amount of ability from Real Madrid, no matter how well they're playing, to lose a Clásico. It's only, especially in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, that we've managed to string some wins together. So, but yeah, this win in particular was quite satisfying, especially considering how the game against Inter went midweek as well. It's always nice to really pile on the misery.
Yeah. Some of the things from the game, right, that stuck out to me. So Real really didn't have any problem breaking down a Barcelona defense that, and I had even brought up this stat because it was just weird more than anything that Barcelona before this game had only allowed one goal in the league. That was due to, you know, part and fact of the competition they had played, part and fact that they were healthy before a week ago, so they had Araujo back there. Real Madrid didn't seem to have any problems with this quote-unquote, you know, vaunted Barcelona defense, in particular without Araujo. I think he would have changed things a little bit. I don't know too much, but did you see anything that, like, going into the match, were you scared of this Barcelona defense at all? Or without Araujo, did you think that Vinicius and Benzema were just going to have a field day?
I definitely felt that we would pose a different challenge to maybe the teams that Barcelona played at the start of the league. I suppose the Champions League group stages as well, the way they've gone, and certainly the fact that they had only conceded one goal in the league and then were conceding all these goals in Europe suggested maybe that there was two different things going on. So I was optimistic, but at the same time, I suppose I had, up until maybe 2 or 3 matches ago, I had concerns about where Benzema's form was. Actually, I think it'd be mainly Benzema's form that he hasn't fired like he had this time last season. But I think Ancelotti's definitely discovered the joys of having Fede Valverde in midfield, Rodrigo, Vinicius up front, rather than having Valverde in the wing. And it's kind of produced this 4-man offense that's really getting going. I think it started out in the Leipzig game or the Shakhtar game, where he moved Fede a little bit more centrally. And it's paid dividends, and I'm certainly enjoying it.
Do you feel like Real had Barcelona's attack in control the whole time?
I think in comparison to previous Clásicos, it was one of the more comfortable defensive performances that I've seen from us. In terms of parallels, it reminds me a little of Ancelotti's the same result from Ancelotti's previous stint, where Madrid had won 22 games, went on to win 22 games in a row, etc. There was a similar comfort level to it. But yeah, I mean, definitely I was probably expecting more offensively for Barca.
Do you feel like, so the thing that surprised me, I guess, was like Barcelona's front three, of course, are obviously like they're very talented and we've seen them do impressive things this year. Maybe not in the matches that I would have hoped that they would have done impressive things, but nevertheless, we've seen flashes. And when those flashes happen, like it's spurned on by the midfield. And in this game, it felt like, you know, Xavi refuses to bench Busquets at this point for reasons unknown to me. But he threw out De Jong to the right of Busquets. And it felt like the Real midfield really just like did a good job of stifling the space that Pedri and De Jong like to thrive in. And like the few times Barcelona had chances, like De Jong was able to break stuff down and get some space. But I don't know. I've been hoping for the last, you know, 12 months that as Real's midfield ages a little bit, that Barcelona's, you know, midfield with Pedri and De Jong, once they figure out the right formation, would actually be able to take advantage of things. But this time it still felt like Real Madrid's midfield just stifled Pedri and De Jong. What did you see?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think even in flashes of games last year where we went into matches without Casemiro, we had Camavinga instead there. It certainly added a different dimension to the game where the, especially with Camavinga, he was just a, in terms of like ball regaining possession, he was a monstrous force. And he just, in terms of, and particularly in off ball positioning as well, he is so intelligent. And I think Tuchmeni as well has done similarly, is similarly as effective and also a much, well, I probably says more about Casemiro's on and off passing than anything, but he's much superior passer than Casemiro ever was for us. So, I mean, like, I even when the original trio ages, we had, I think even, we've always had that kind of backup in Camavinga and Tuchmeni, Valverde, Ceballos and flashes, you know, off the bench, has done well. We've had options, and I think particularly towards the end of last season in games, even a handful of games I went to see myself, there was some potential in the midfield. Maybe not so much to have justified selling Casemiro like we did, although I would agree with the move, but I definitely would say the outlook was, has always been pretty positive for me. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too hard about that one.
No. I'm taking it well. Who was the best player on the pitch for Barcelona? The one, okay, besides Lewandowski, I guess. I don't know if he would have been your answer, but hey, let's take Lewandowski out of it. Who was the player on the pitch that you were most intimidated by for Barcelona?
I'd have to say, since he kind of broke out, I've always had a fear of Ansu Fati. he's the sort of kind of young dynamism that I've seen Real Madrid enjoy the kind of bounties of, and it does fill me with a certain amount of comfort that Xavi doesn't seem to see that potential in him.
Gosh, I mean, when he did come on though, that move was unbelievable.
Yeah. And it seems like it's something, I mean, apart from the Inter game, in the games that I've watched of Barca, it seems to be something he's capable of doing every time he comes on. So, like, I suppose as a rival, I'm pleased that he doesn't get the game time, but as a neutral, I can't really understand why.
Yeah, I don't know. I did want to say congrats to Ferran Torres for scoring a goal. Great on you for being able to tap it in. The sarcasm's dripping through my voice, if anybody can tell.
It's always frustrating for, I think for us anyways, that whereas, you know, in second halves where Barcelona would have a 2-0 lead, they would rub it in, whereas Madrid just take their foot off the pedal. It was something that I think Ancelotti touched on, that, you know, kind of tried to take the high ground of, oh, we don't care about embarrassing opponents, we care about the 3 points. But I mean, there's enough of these like old heads in there to remember the sort of defeats we've had where you have to wonder.
They do seem to fall asleep at the wheel a little bit.
Yeah, it's very frustrating as a fan who's had to watch a lot of rough defeats over the last couple of years that we aren't willing to rub in the advantage. But maybe one day. We can dream, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Was it a penalty? What do you think?
I mean,
it looked like the move had stopped. It looked like he lost the ball to me.
Yeah, it looked there was a stomp there. Do I think it would be given if VAR wasn't there? Probably not, but I don't know. I'm all for a little bit of, especially when it's my team, I'm all for kind of, if you feel a stomp, go down and see if you can get something.
Yeah. I was just surprised that they reversed it, right? Because it's obviously, if he had called it on the pitch and then gone to VAR, like, I don't know, if you want to not overturn it at that point, that's fine. But it was just strange to me. He didn't call it and then went to VAR. And it was a very quick decision. Like, you're not used to seeing that.
Yeah. I mean, they were kind of assured through commentary and stuff that VAR is checking all decisions. But when there's not that kind of, I suppose for an American audience, this might be strange, but in this part of the world, we have rugby union. So I don't know if it's similar to American football, but with different rules. And in rugby, they have a similar video referee, but the communication between the video referee and the referee is televised. So you get an idea of where the decision making is coming from, the conversations that are being had. Whereas even in English speaking leagues, it's not, that whole thing is behind curtains. So we have no idea. Like when a referee decides that he got the decision wrong or why he's standing by it or whatever, it's always behind curtains. We have no idea what's informing these choices.
And so I've heard about rugby doing that, and I've never understood why big leagues around the world just think obscurity is somehow better. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think probably, especially in Spain anyways, it becomes more and more clear that it's less so the ability to review a decision, more so just the standard of refereeing. I think last night anyways, I think Elche and Valencia played, and there was a load of referee controversy. So it's happening to everybody. And it's been that case for years. I can't say I watch a huge amount of other La Liga teams in recent years because I like to watch the reserves, so I kind of miss it. But I remember when I was watching the league consistently that there was always that kind of at least one decision where you're kind of like, how did the referee get that one wrong?
Today, you know, we're recording this the day of the Ballon d'Or ceremony. I'll just give you the floor. Do you want to give Benzema his flowers preemptively?
There's not really much left to say about Karim. I think he's fully deserving of a Ballon d'Or. I want to balance this because I've always been someone who kind of doesn't, I mean, it's like the Community Shield or the Spanish Super Cup. If you win it, you're like, great, we won it. But if you don't win it, it's not a big deal. I mean, I don't think my opinion of Benzema is going to change if he wins the Ballon d'Or or not. But saying that, I think he fully deserves the accolades. He really did a huge job for us, let alone from last season. But since Ronaldo's left, he's stepped up to the plate hugely. He showed a sort of goal scoring form that a lot of people didn't think he had. And he's managed to balance that with some of the good things that he's always had in his game. So, you know, all due respect.
Yeah. So he is the clear betting favorite. I'm looking at odds from a site that won't be named. He's -2500 to win. Who would you guess are kind of rounding out maybe the top, you know, four or five besides Benzema?
I don't know. I think with the Ballon d'Or, the kind of glamour and story of it really does take precedence. So I imagine Courtois is up there somewhere. And then outside of that, it's probably, I would hope De Bruyne is in there or Haaland.
Courtois is not in the top 10 betting favorites. De Bruyne's like fifth. So second, third, and fourth. Second is Sadio Mane. Third is Salah. Fourth is Mbappe. And I mean, I guess you're taking the international competition and like prioritizing that with Mane and Mo, probably.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'd actually forgotten the Africa Cup of Nations had been on.
Yeah.
earlier this year.
And somehow our good pal Cristiano Ronaldo is 10th in betting odds. I'm not sure what they're watching, but I guess maybe you're just trying to get some action, make some money.
Absolutely.
You're the sports book. I'm surprised Messi's not up there. All right, let's talk about, actually, before we get into prospects moving forward, and I'm not going to keep you too long. What were your thoughts on the Drake kits? Did you think they were dope or what?
Oh, dear. Yeah. Honestly, never mind.
I guess I did appreciate the jokes about the Drake kits being like the fifth lever. I did like that. Yeah. That was funny. Let's talk about prospects moving forward. I don't want to talk about Europe. I will say, and I mentioned this last week, I'm just so jealous. I mean, really, Shakhtar, like that's who Real Madrid get is like the hard team in your group. And I'm dealing with freaking Inter and Bayern.
We've had our groups in the days.
Who, Dortmund?
Well, I mean, we had Dortmund. We usually got a hard draw in the knockouts, Bayern, City, Chelsea.
The twice. Knockout. I would just like to make it to the knockout. Oh, pain. All right. How are you feeling about Real Madrid's prospects in the league? Because obviously, like, this is a big win, whatever. 3 points up. But it's early. Do you feel like, and like with how Ancelotti is setting his team up, how do you feel about the prospects in the league?
I'm always of the opinion that for us to win the league, we need other teams to do us favors, because we're quite susceptible to winning games like this and then dropping points the following week. I think we're playing midweek today or this week, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we drop points to Osasuna or Elche or something like that. So I mean, it's far from over. It really does depend on how much of a gap we can build between now and Christmas, and then, well, now until the World Cup anyways, and then kind of hope that the FIFA virus favors us, because it rarely seems to favor you guys. You guys always get done by the FIFA virus.
Gosh, it's so frustrating too, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be a revisionist guy and be like, oh, if both teams were healthy, Barcelona would have won. I don't think that. But it is frustrating that like Barcelona finally get defensive depth, and then Bellerin, Araujo, freaking Jules goes out. Like and he was back, but it is annoying that as soon as we have like the vital Champions League matches, the freaking international break just destroys us. And now, let's see, I guess Madrid in particular, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more matches till the international break for a month and a half. And I'm sure Barcelona's around the same, so not much more time to build up a gap there. I don't have anything else for you. Do you have any parting words for the Barcelona listeners before you head out?
No, I've probably annoyed them enough by now.
No, I think you've been quite gracious. I probably would have been a bit more pompous. You know, had
you see, I'm not gonna. It's just in the league, it's always a dangerous game.
For us, it's always
like just two or three games away from disaster. In Europe, it's a different story. We just seem to have we know ourselves in Europe, so we know even if we lose 3-1 in the first leg, we'll come back in the second. Whereas, the opposite is true in the league for us.
Yeah, it is funny. Like when I think about, because you know how you have those football matches that you can kind of remember where you were. That comeback against City, like I'll forever remember watching, and just like I was texting my buddy who's a City fan, and we're like watching it happen, and we're like, this feels expected and somehow just like fake at the same time. It was just so stupid because everyone knew that like City were going to choke somehow, but it just, they keep upping the ridiculousness of themselves. And then just to shove it in Liverpool's face, I don't know. All right. Everyone check out Christopher's great work at managingmadrid.com. Although they write about some questionable topics like Real Madrid, they are a great site and I admire them a lot. So Christopher, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.